Chapter 19. Pack Mentality. Ossorik. Reunion. Bryngarr stalked on all fours amongst the steaming carcasses of the pack. He had rent them apart with tooth and claw, his furred muzzle stained with their blood. They had challenged him, and he had proved he was dominant. Upon the snowy Fenrisian plain, his feral eyes cast across a silver ocean so still that it was like glass. He sniffed the air, the scent of something drifting towards him on the cold breeze. Long wolf ears, pricking at the faintest sound of disturbed tundra, he saw a shape above him, moving stealthily up a craggy peak under a shawl of snow. Another wolf still lived, and was stalking him. Bryngarr emitted a baleful howl that echoed across the soaring mountains. Its challenge was met by another. The hackles rose on Bryngar's back as the other wolf loped into view. He was smaller, but lean and well-muscled. Reddish-brown fur covered his lupine body, and he pawed at the ground with blood-red claws. Bryngarr growled at the red wolf's approach, a deep and ululating sound that resonated through his body. The challenger stepped down onto the plain, and they began circling each other, the old and venerable grey versus the youthful red. Death was the only outcome. The only thing that was uncertain was whether the duel would claim them both. Ribbons of wolf flesh still clung to Bryngarr's fangs. The blood taste was intoxicating, and the scent set his feral senses aflame. With a roar, he dived at the other wolf, biting and clawing with savage abandon. So furious was the attack that the red wolf was bowled briefly off balance. He twisted in Bryngarr's jaws, scraping wildly with his claws and biting down against the grey's back. The wolves broke apart, both bloodied and full of fury. This time the red wolf attacked, launching a swift assault that saw him rake his claws down Bryngarr's flank. The old grey wolf yelped in pain and skidded away across the ice plain on all fours before regrouping to charge again. The red wolf slashed a claw across Bryngarr's muzzle as he came at him, but the old grey was not to be deterred. Ignoring the pain, Bryngarr locked his jaw around the red wolf's neck and bit down. Claws raked his flank as the red wolf's back legs kicked out in desperation. Bryngarr could hear his opponent's frantic breathing and feel the hotness against his fur, the vapour cooling in the cold. With a grunt of effort, he snapped the red wolf's neck. It yelped just before it died, and fell limp in Bryngarr's jaw. The old wolf shook the corpse loose and howled in triumph, blood drizzling from his maw as he brandished gory fangs. The silver ocean was before him once more, and Bryngarr felt it call to him. Snow spilled across its mirror sheen in fat white drifts. It fell upon the ground where Bryngarr stood, covering up the spilled blood of the slain wolves. The old grey was about to lope off when a shadow fell across the ice plain. He looked up, and for a moment could see nothing through the heavy snowfall. Then, slowly, a figure resolved itself. It was a black wolf, easily twice his size, sitting on its haunches, watching him calmly. There was no challenge in its posture. Bryngarr detected no threat in either its tone or manner. It merely watched. The grey wolf had seen this black-furred beast before. He approached it slowly, warily, and stopped as the black wolf got up. Its eyes bored into him, and it opened its mouth as if to howl.
"Look around you," said the black wolf,
and though it spoke the words of man, Bryngarr the grey wolf understood.
"Look around you, Bryngarr," said the giant black wolf again. "This is not Fenris."
Bryngarr woke from a dream straight into a nightmare. Rujveld lay dead at his feet. The Bloodclaw's throat had been ripped out, and vital fluids pooled around his corpse. Bryngarr tasted copper in his mouth, and knew at once that he had killed him. Out of the corner of his eye, the Wolfguard saw the other grey-armoured forms, and realized that he had slain all of his kinsmen. He shut his eyes against the horror, willing it to be his fevered imagination, but when Bryngarr opened them again, he knew it was not. The Wolfguard got unsteadily to his feet. The last thing he remembered was approaching the furious abyss. Their shuttle had been hit and they'd crashed in a place of darkness. The rest was lost. He had emerged onto what he thought was Fenris. He knew that this was some form of psychic lie. He clenched his fists at the thought of being manipulated by witchcraft. It had cost the lives of his battle brothers. He had been damned by it. Senses returning, Bryngar looked around. The chamber was gloomy in the extreme, but felt large and tall. It was some kind of armoury. He stood face to face with a suit of dreadnought armour. Startled at first, the Wolfguard took an instinctive step back and reached for Felltooth. When he realized that the sarcophagus of the mighty war machine was empty and dormant, he relaxed. There was another dreadnought next to it, similarly harnessed, made ready for the warrior who would become entombed within it for all time or until they fell in service to the Legion. The armoury was vast and well stocked. There were crates of munitions stacked in rows. They joined ranks of bolter clips, fuel cells, and harnessed grenades. It was the hulking presence of the dreadnoughts, however, that caught the Space Wolf's attention. Next to the second war machine, there was another, and another, and another. Bryngar gazed up and across the chamber, his enhanced eyesight adjusting to the darkness. At least 100 dreadnoughts filled the massive armoury hall, their somnambulant forms held fast in racks and rows. Weapons systems, great piston hammers, power flails, autocannons, heavy bolters, twin-linked flamers and missile pods were arrayed next to them, waiting to be attached to the dreadnought body. Bryngar balked at the firepower on display and the thought of thousands of these armoured leviathans going to war in Lorgar's name. Bryngar's ears pricked up. He'd lost his battle helm at some point he could not recall. A slab of metal slid away from a bare wall in the armoury hall, and a shaft of wan red light issued through the gap. A tall, thin shadow was waiting outside, and, with the way open, it moved into the room. It was clad in black robes, and Bryngar detected the glint of a metal artifice at its back. Mechanicum. The Magos turned when it noticed the Astartes in the armoury. Without preamble, it came at the Space Wolf, a mechadendrite drill emerging from the folds of its robes. Bryngar slashed the mechanical arm of the weapon, oil spilling from the severed metal limb like blood, and brought Felltooth down onto the hapless Magos with a roar. The creature gurgled as it died in what might have been an expression of pain or regret. It twitched for a moment, as if its mechanical body was taking time to realize that it was already dead, before at last it lay still. The red light continued to issue from the portal opened by the Magos. Bryngar had no idea where it led, but perhaps he could find some vulnerable location on the ship and do some damage, making the sacrifice of his blood claws and his own terrible act worth something. Maybe even the Ultramarine was still alive and he could find him. These thoughts running through his mind, the Wolfguard took a step towards the portal, but stopped when he heard the shift of metal in the chamber, followed by the pressure hiss of a disengaging harness. Bryngar turned towards the sound, his accentuated hearing pinpointing its location exactly, and paused. He did not have to wait long for the source of the disturbance to reveal itself.
"I serve the Legion eternally," a scratchy voice said, emitted from a voxcaster out of the darkness. Heavy metal footfalls, like the thunk of giant hammers hitting metal, echoed in the armoury as a massive dreadnought emerged from the shadows. The thing was an abomination, only part way through the procedure of interment. The armoured sarcophagus hung open, revealing a translucent blister pod in which a naked form was surrounded in amniotic fluid. The viscous material clung to the body, casting the enhanced musculature of the entombed Astartes in a dull sheen through the blister. It walked unsteadily, and one of its arms was missing, disconnected cabling flapping like cut veins, doubtless still awaiting the weapons of destruction through which it would express the art of war. The other arm, though, was more than ready, a massive spiked hammer swinging from it. A faint energy crackle played along its surface, casting stark flashes onto the dreadnought as it primed the deadly weapon subconsciously. A sense of palpable menace came from the metal monster that towered over Bryngar. The old wolf took a step back, swinging Felltooth in readiness. The armour of his opponent looked thick, and he hoped that the rune axe could pierce it.
"My enemy," droned the dreadnought, lumbering forward to close off the exit to the armoury as a flare of recognition coloured its tone and demeanour. "Altis must die," it added, pausing for a moment as if suddenly confused, before it refocused on the Space Wolf and continued, "You will not gain the ship."
Bryngar knew this warrior. He had killed him once already, at Bacca Triumvirum.
Bellanus, it said with machine coldness.
The assault, Captain.
Didn't I kill you once already? Growled the wolf guard. Destroy you,
the dreadnought replied, the sarcophagus closing up over the blister.
Round two,
Bryngar whispered, as Bellanus, the dreadnought, charged. Motep crashed through the blast doors of the bridge and skidded across the floor of an adjoining corridor. Fire wreathed his armour, and scorch marks tarnished it from where the demon had burned him with its breath. The force of the blow was such that Motep tried to claw at the corridor walls to slow his passage, but the wood veneer and metal tore away in his grasp, revealing bare wiring and fat cables that spat sparks and flame. The Thousand Sun struck a bulkhead at the corridor's intersection and crumpled to a halt, pain lancing his back and shoulder. Heat coiled from the edges of Motep's armour. The faceplate of his helmet had taken the worst of the impact, and he ripped it away, half-melted, leaving the rest of the headgear intact, together with a psychic hood. Discarding the battle helm faceplate, Motep got to his feet. Three claw marks were cut so deep into his cuirass that they bled. The Astartes staggered at first, but drew on his psychic reserves to steel himself. Forcing one foot in front of the other, banishing the pain, he made his way back to the bridge. Mussorik stepped from the shattered blast doors, metal squealing as the demon pushed its immense bulk through the ragged hole left by Motep. The beast would meet him halfway. As it got closer, Motep saw that the black armour carapace was cracked in places, and faintly glowing ichor seeped from minor cuts on its body. It could be hurt, at least. Motep clung to that small sliver of hope as he readied his spear. With a muttered incantation, he sent an arc of crimson lightning towards the demon. The creature shied away at first, using its muscular forearm to fend off the psychic assault, but the cerulean energy quickly died, and Basoric emerged unscathed.
"Like an insect,"
said the demon, its voice accompanied by the slither of muscle and the cracking of bone.
"You are harder to kill than your feeble frame suggests."
"I am Astartes. I am an avenging angel of the Emperor of Mankind,"
Motep challenged, using the brief respite to marshal his strength. Though he was weak and in pain, the Thousand Sun was careful not to show weakness, not even to contemplate defeat, for if he did, the demon would seize upon it and all would be lost.
"I am your doom,"
Wasoric promised, and came forward with preternatural speed.
"As I am yours,"
Motep hissed. Talons like blades scythed the air, and Motep's spear spat golden sparks as he used it to parry the blow. He was staggered by the force of it and took an involuntary step back, boots grinding metal. He lunged with his spear, igniting the tip in an aura of crimson fire, and pierced Rasoric's side. The demon's skin felt like iron, and the resonance of the blow rippled down Motep's forearm and into his shoulder. The effect was numbing, and he nearly dropped the weapon. Rasoric's pain bellow was immense, and the Thousand Sun winced against its intensity before withdrawing. With the servos in his armour assisting his muscles, Motep leapt backwards, the tattered robes of his armour flapping like a cloak, and landed, spear in hand, before the demon could retaliate.
"You have failed here, spirit,"
he said, filling his voice with absolute certainty.
"Wraith of times past, I name thee. Native thing of the warp, I shall send you back there. However much you hunger, you are known to me, and you will not prevail. You will be banished by the light of the Emperor."
"You know nothing,"
Wasoric sneered,
"of what we are."
The terrible wound in its side was already healing.
"You are misled, and you know not of your fate."
An image flashed briefly in Motep's mind of the spires of Prospero burning and the howling of wolves. It was the same vision he'd seen when Mussorik had first tried to subvert him, and it came back like a recurring nightmare to haunt him. Motep focused, determined not to give in, and slowly the image faded away like smoke.
I am Motep, thousandth son of Magnus the Red. The wisdom of Ahriman flows within me.
The affirmation steeled him, and power coursed through his body. Wasoric's body, all muscle and blemished skin, like the hide of a diseased corpse, shuddered with what the thousand sun could only think was laughter. The demon's bloody lips peeled back from its dog-like skull, and its pure black eyes shimmered wetly in sunken sockets of gore. One of Wasoric's hands turned in on itself with a foul sucking sound, forming a wide orifice which the monster aimed like a gun. The demon roared with effort, and a bolt of purple fire spat from its hand. Motep couldn't get out of the way quickly enough, and the blast caught his pauldron, hitting him hard enough to throw him spinning down the corridor. The Thousand Sun was on his feet as soon as he landed, feeling the armour down one side char with the heat and the exposed skin of his face blistering. Wasoric fired again, a heavy chain of caged fire spitting from his hand. The monster was laughing loudly, a horrendous gurgling sound that sprayed blood from its throat. Motep rolled around the intersection, tumbling into another corridor as lances of fire tore through the bulkhead. The stink of burning metal filled his nostrils, and wretched heat plagued his skin, but Motep was not about to give up. Once the conflagration had died down, he swung back around the intersection. From his outstretched palm, he sent a boiling mass of crimson fire against the demon, which coursed over its weapon arm, searing it shut. "The word-bearers will not succeed," he said, rushing forward with his spear. "The Emperor knows he is betrayed. Logar will not escape his justice."
"I care nothing for Logar's dogs," roared Wasoric. "They are beholden to the will of the warp, the ancient ones that dwell in the Empyrean. The slave Logar is merely a tool in the fashioning of our grand design. Mankind will fall as old night returns to the galaxy, shrouding it in a second darkness. You will all be slaves!"
Astartes and demon clashed. Motep ran his spear through Osoric's side, while the demon swatted him against the corridor wall with the sweep of its gargantuan claws. Before the Thousand Sun could recover, it seized upon his skull and started to squeeze. Motep could hear the bone cracking inside his head as dark spots flecked his failing vision.
"Your emperor can plot and cower all he likes," said Wasoric. "What has the warp to fear from him?"
He taunted, exerting more pressure.
"Knowledge,"
hissed Motep through clenched teeth,
"is power."
Twin beams of light seared from his eyes, burning Wasoric's face and torso. The demon recoiled, loosing its grip, and Motep rammed his spear into its neck. Shrieking in pain, Wasoric let him down, and the Thousand Sun clattered to the floor, the spear still embedded in the demon's neck. With a massive effort, Motep got up and threw the demon off, a mental shield forming in his mind and crystallizing in the air before him. Wasoric was angry, its red raw flesh charred and bleeding ichor. The fresh spear wound had not closed. Wasoric came at the Thousand Sun again, tearing through the psychic shield as if it was parchment. Cestus fell flat on his face, dry heaving. He couldn't tell which way was up. He was cold, appallingly cold, as if he was wrapped in ice or exposed to the naked void. The feeling of his body coming apart was an agonizing echo in every bone and tendon. To turn like that from a living, breathing man to a piece of mangled meat, to be trapped in that transition, feeling his spine cracking and his chest splitting, had been as obscene as it was tortuous. He felt violated, as if his flesh didn't belong to him anymore. Cestus opened his eyes. He was in the last circle of hell. It was an endless shaft of blackness, reaching up and down for infinity. Hundreds of long, thin blades penetrated the darkened void, hanging down from above and spearing down forever. On these blades were impaled traitors to Macragge. They slid, centimetre by centimetre, down into the black. Cestus stood on a thin spur of rock reaching from the wall of this circle of hell. He saw the faces of the condemned, locked in eternal screams, as the blades bit slowly through them.
"You have as many circles of sin as hell itself," said the taskmaster, standing behind Cestus.
The ultramarine got a good look at him for the first time, as burly as an Astartes, dressed in tarnished steel armour, such as that worn by Macragge's ancient battle kings. He wore a leather apron stained with blood and sweat. His face was like a solid slab, features worn down by an eternity serving in hell. The whip in his hand was as cruel and ugly a weapon as Cestus had ever seen.
"I am not a traitor," said Cestus. "Neither are these," said the taskmaster, pointing with his whip towards the damned souls, sliding their way into eternity. "They think they are. Theirs is a sin more of arrogance than treachery. They thought they really had the capacity to betray their fellow man, but in truth they're just petty thieves and killers. Unremarkable. To be a true betrayer, you need power to turn against your brother. Very few ever possess it. That the virtue in acquiring that very power should be so tainted by the act of betrayal, that is the truth of the sin. That is what makes it fouler still than anything else."
Cestus looked down at his body. His armour was gone, and he wore the deep blue padded armour of an aspirant of Macragge, with the crest of the Battle Kings on his chest. It was what he had worn when he had first stepped up to the Ultramarine's chaplain and declared that he believed he was ready to join the Sons of Gilliman. It was tattered and torn, stained with the blood of a thousand battles.
"I am no traitor, imagined or otherwise. I have never turned on my brothers. As for you, Lysimachus, where do you really belong? You are an Astartes with all the power and brutality that brings. You're a murderer, too, given all the people and Xenos you have killed. Do you really believe that not one of them could have been undeserving of their fate? Think of all those sins, and that is without the mission you died fighting. You led a whole fleet to its destruction. You allowed your battle brothers to die in vain. You protected a Psyker, knowing full well that he was in breach of the Council of Nicaea. All of this to fight your fellow Astartes. Where, Captain, do we start with you?"
Cestus looked down over the edge of the precipice. The true heart of hell was there. Something enormous roiled down, barely visible against the darkness. A vast maw ground traitors beneath its teeth. Thousands of eyes accused them with every flash of pain.
"None of this is real," said Cestus.
The ultramarine smiled despite his surroundings as the clarity of understanding washed away all doubt, like blue water.
"I am not dead, and this is not hell," he affirmed. "How can you be sure?" asked the taskmaster. "Because I may be guilty of everything you have said. I have led men to their deaths, and killed and maimed and turned on fellow Astartes, but I am no traitor."
Cestus stepped off the ledge and fell into the last hell. Pain, real, tangible pain, slammed into Cestus as he hit the ground. He had escaped. Somehow, through resolve and belief in himself, he had shrugged off the psychic glamour, the cage of his own mind, and emerged intact. The booming of the big guns hammered at him through the floor, and recollection returned. He was on the furious abyss. Cynically, he wondered if it might have been more prudent to stay in hell. Cestus's body ached, and he tested himself for injuries. He was bruised and rattled, but otherwise fine, and he still had his armour. Getting to his feet, he saw Excelinor beside him. In his fever dream, he must have dragged his battle brother along with him, although the ultramarine captain had no idea where he actually was. Cestus felt a pang of grief in his heart. Excelinor was dead. It was possible that under the psychic assault, the Astartes Susan membrane had shut his body down into stasis. It hardly mattered. There would be no waking him. Cestus crouched over his fallen battle brother and rested his arms across his chest, placing the short blade in his grasp in a death salute. The ultramarine captain could do little more. He stood up again and backed up against a wall, ignoring the throbbing in his head. He felt his armour dispensing painkillers into his system and detected his altered physiognomy at work, enabling him to move and fight. Scanning his surroundings, Cestus gathered that he was no longer outside the ordnance decks. He had no idea how he had got to this place and assumed that he had staggered through the tunnels of the Furious Abyss in a psychic-induced delirium, some innate survival instinct carrying him from immediate danger. It looked like a barracks. He dredged flashes of schematic implanted in his mind by Motep. Several dormitories made up the deck, and there was a temple at the far end. It was the only exit. Treading cautiously, assuming that the deck must be largely unoccupied or he would have been discovered already, Cestus made for the temple. The chamber was anathema to everything the Emperor had taught them to believe. It opposed the era of enlightenment that the Great Crusade was meant to usher in for mankind, the banishment of barbarian customs, and the value of the empirical over the superstitious. The temple flouted everything the Astartes stood for. It was a place of worship, but of what craven deities, Cestus did not know. An altar sat against one wall, and there were pews arranged for prayer. The chamber was dressed with deep scarlet banners and crimson embroidery. The ultramarine tried to focus on the designs, but found he couldn't as they appeared to squirm and congeal before his eyes. Several small blood-stained objects stood on the altar. Cestus realized that they were severed fingers, hundreds of them. An image of the Furious' crewmen lining up to mutilate themselves in the name of Lorgar filled his mind. Cestus shook it away and forced himself to focus. His mind was still reeling. He had been to hell. The aftertaste of it was in his mouth, and his body remembered the feeling of being wrenched apart. The sound of footsteps snapped his attention to the present. They were approaching fast. Voices barked orders, and armoured bodies clattered through a doorway nearby. Though it rankled to hide, Cestus moved swiftly to the far end of the room where he could disappear into a shadowy alcove. It stank of old blood and decaying flesh. For the span of the Furious' short life, the crew had used it constantly for their devotions. Books were piled up behind the altar nearby, each one with a rune of an eight-pointed star on the cover. Cestus averted his gaze, unwilling to learn of the myriad forms of damnation that awaited him within those pages.
"There! The blood trail's in here! Guns up and execute!"
It came from inside the room. Cestus slid his bolt pistol from his holster and risked a glance around the altar. A squad of five word-bearers had entered the room and were sweeping every corner with bolters. One wore an open book worked into the breastplate of his armour, words upon it inscribed in gold intaglio. Cestus assumed that he was a Legion veteran given command of the squad.
"Check the barrack rooms," growled the veteran with a voice like churning gravel.
The word-bearer cradled a low-slung melter gun, a short-range weapon that burned through armour and flesh like parchment. It was an Astartes killer, the perfect hunting weapon. The veteran and two others were left in the temple. The squad fanned out at a silent battle sign from their leader and were working their way through the pews. Cestus needed to act while he still maintained the element of surprise. Unclipping a pair of frag grenades from his belt, he thumbed the activation icon on each and rolled them slowly across the ground. One of the word-bearers reacted to the sound and swung his bolter around to fire. Frag exploded in his face before he could pull the trigger, ripping off part of his helmet. A secondary detonation erupted beneath the other Astartes. The impact accentuated in the close confines and took off his leg at the armour joint. Spits of flame and a storm of splinters still clouding the air, Cestus was up and drilled a shot through the first word-bearer, exploiting the fact that his head armour was compromised. A puff of red mist came from the back of the word-bearer's head before he died. The ultramarine heard the telltale whine of the melter gun powering up and threw himself aside as the word-bearer veteran discharged the deadly weapon. His sightline was cluttered with debris, and the shot burned through the still-falling one-legged word-bearer, who slumped to the ground with a smoking crater through his torso. Cestus was up in moments, leaping over the pews and pumping rounds from his bolt pistol. The veteran, the last word-bearer standing in the temple, saw the ultramarine but reacted too slowly. Before he could swing his melter gun around for a second shot, bolt rounds punched him in the arm and torso. The veteran spun and bucked with the impacts. As Cestus reached him, he had already drawn his power sword and lopped off the falling veteran's head with a grunt of effort. Ignoring the sanguine gore pouring from the veteran's neck, Cestus pushed on and regained the corridor outside the temple that led to the barrack rooms. A surprised word-bearer, alerted by the gunfire, emerged from one of the chambers. Cestus shot him through the lens of his battle-helm, and the enemy Astartes crumpled with a muffled cry. A second word-bearer sensibly employed more caution, using the extended grip of his bolter so that he could reach around the doorway and blindly strafe the corridor. Cestus hugged the wall as the shot streamed past, muzzle flash blazing. An errant bolt-round struck his pauldron armour, sending a chip spinning into Cestus's face. He was without his battle-helm and fought the urge to cry out when the shard cut into his flesh and embedded there. Instead, he rolled his body over the wall, descending into a crouching stance, and squeezed his bolt-pistol trigger in an attempt to force his aggressor back into the chamber. The weapon clicked in his grasp. It seemed so loud and final, despite the roar of battle filling Cestus's ears. The ultramarine's mouth formed an oath as the word-bearer, who must have heard the dry shot, came out from his hiding place, laughing. Instinctively, Cestus hurled his power sword. The blade spun end over end and thunked hard through the shocked word-bearer's gorget, impaling him through the neck. The Astartes staggered, arms splayed at first, as he struggled to comprehend what had just happened to him, dark fluid leaking down his breastplate like a flood. Cestus followed the sword's path at a run, smacking the bolt gun out of the stricken traitor's hand and wrenching the power sword free, taking the word-bearer's head with it.
"My brother, my enemy,"
Cestus breathed after he took a moment to take stock, regarding the carnage of the dead word-bearers around him. 5 Astartes slain, albeit traitors, by his hand. A temple devoted to heathen gods. Enlightenment and the pragmatism of science and reason abandoned for superstition. Cestus felt the galaxy darkening, even as he sheathed his power sword and discarded the word-bearer's unusable bolt eclipse. Grimacing, he tugged the ceramite chip from his face, and then he pushed on. Somewhere ahead, he knew, was an armory. Bryngar leapt aside as the power hammer crashed down onto the deck. Rolling to his feet, the Space Wolf could only watch as Belarnus, awesome in his dreadnought armor, wrenched the weapon free from a crater filled with sparking wires and torn metal. Cables ripped out where the hammerhead were snarled around the weapon's spikes like intestines. Belarnus grunted as he righted himself, confusion still warring within him, and charged again. Bryngar ducked beneath the wild sweep of the hammer this time, the solid metal face whistling past his head like a death knell. The Space Wolf moved in with Felltooth and landed a fearsome blow to Belarnus's armoured flank. The rune axe spanged against the reinforced ceramite frame and bit deep. But the word-bearer dreadnought didn't slow. Belarnus's momentum carried him thundering into the Space Wolf, his machine bulk like a battering ram. Bryngar was smashed aside and lost his grip on Felltooth. He skidded on his front across the deck, friction sparks kicked up from his armour, spitting in the Space Wolf's face. Bryngar grimaced and got up, drawing a knife from his belt. The monomolecular blade was honed to beyond razor sharpness and could scythe open power armour with a proper amount of pressure. The only downside was its appalling reach, and Bryngar doubted whether a thrown blade would even irritate his Goliath enemy. Roaring a battle cry, the old wolf launched himself at Belarnus, who was still turning, flashing in and out of lucidity. With every attack from the Space Wolf, though, the dreadnought's memory was renewed. Clinging to the word-bearer machine's weapon arm, Bryngar rammed his knife blade into the armor joint that sealed the sarcophagus in an attempt to prise it open. Belarnus spun hard, armored feet stomping up and down, and his torso twisting as he sought to dislodge his opponent. Bryngar dug in, wrapping his legs around the dreadnought's shoulder as he pushed the blade two-handed until it reached the hilt. Belarnus, realizing that he couldn't shake the Space Wolf loose, decided to ram the Astartes into the armory wall and charged headlong into it. Bryngar saw the empty dreadnought suits coming towards him at speed and realized that he was about to be crushed. He swung aside at the last moment, violently thrown clear as Belarnus careered into the dormant armor with a deafening clang. Dislodging himself quickly, the word-bearer turned and stomped towards the prone Space Wolf, still dazed from his hurried dismount, intending to crush him beneath his feet. With a groan of pain, Bryngar rolled aside, but Belarnus was getting quicker and caught him a glancing blow with a power hammer as the Space Wolf struggled to rise. White fury filled Bryngar's body, and for a moment he was back at Fenris, though now a man, standing upon the shores of the silvery grey ocean. Bryngar ducked a second swipe of the giant hammer that would have shattered his skull, and ended the duel then and there. He saw Felltooth in flashes, but couldn't reach the weapon's half to wrench it free. Bryngar also saw that the sarcophagus had sprung open, the collision forcing it loose with the Space Wolf's knife lodged in the joint. The amniotic blister lay unprotected. Bryngar went for his bolt pistol, but found it wasn't there. He cursed loudly. He must have lost it during the crash or at some point in a psychic fever dream. Blood drooled from the Space Wolf's mouth and nose, matting in the hair of his beard. His leg felt leaden and unresponsive. His body ached as if stuck with red-hot pins. This was the end. Unarmed and injured, even a warrior of Bryngar's prowess could not hope to hold out against a dreadnought. Belarnos seemed to sense that inevitability, and moved in slowly, as if savouring the kill. The Space Wolf realised that he was laughing. The action of it hurt his chest. The shadow of the dreadnought eclipsed him completely, and Bryngar closed his eyes, imaging the ocean.
"Fenris," he whispered.
A bolter shot, stark and hollow, resounded in the armoury. Bryngar's eyes snapped open to see a smoking hole in the blister, fracture lines emanating outwards from the puncture crater. Belarnos was rocked backwards, a gurgling sound emanating from his voximeter. Viscous amniotic fluid spilled out from the crack like brine. The Space Wolf ran forward, despite a new pain flaring in his leg, and ripped Felltooth free from the dreadnought's bulk. He carved a line down the blister as Belarnos flailed in desperation, and it cracked apart. The fluid gushed out, taking the incumbent Astartes inside with it. Belarnos flopped out of the shattered blister, half suspended by the circuitry and cables linking him to the dreadnought armour. A second shot from the still unseen bolt pistol struck him in the chest, and thick blood oozed from the wound. The dreadnought fell backwards, hitting the armoury floor with a resounding clang, and was still. Bryngar crawled on top of it, straddling the machine, and tore into the wasted body of Belarnos with his rune axe, until there was nothing left.
"Try coming back from that," he breathed savagely.
Resonating footsteps made the Space Wolf turn around to regard his saviour. Skrall emerged from the gloom, bolt pistol still smoking in his outstretched fist.
"Thought you were dead,"
grunted the old wolf, and promptly collapsed. Motep forced the end of his arm back into his shoulder joint. The pain didn't mean anything. The grimace on his face was from frustration that the arm, and with it his spear, would be weakened. He heaved down a couple of deep breaths and backed up against a bulkhead. The battle against Wasoric had passed beyond the corridor outside the bridge and had progressed to the senior crew quarters, chambers allocated to him before he'd been confined to isolation. They were relatively close to the bridge, should an emergency necessitate the presence of any senior crew. That fact meant little in the face of certain death, save that the trail of destruction left by their battle was short-lived. As he regarded the collapsed ceiling, the wreckage of two decks punctuated by a few intact support stanchions and columns still smouldering, Motep came to realize that he was the last living being on the command deck. The Thousand Sun had lost sight of the demon when he'd been smashed through the deck and landed in the chamber below. Wasoric could be anywhere. He tasted blood in his mouth and knew the fused carapace of his ribs was broken. His breathing was ragged, which indicated a punctured lung, and his shoulder burned. In truth, the fight was not going as he'd hoped.
"You resisted," said the demon. "I turned your brothers against you, showed you the path, and you refused it. That was folly."
Motep tried to follow the sound of Osoric's voice, but it came from all around him.
"Do you realize how fragile the Emperor's house is? How easily his sons will war with one another? It took nothing to make the wolf turn on you, and little more for the Puritan captain to abandon your defence."
Motep ignored the goading and tried to focus. It was dark in the crew quarters, all power having died on the Rothel, and he closed his eyes, relying instead on his psi-sight to guide him. Life support was dead too, and the air was growing stagnant without it. Motep kept his breathing steady so as not to use up too much oxygen.
"The Imperium will fall,"
Wasoric promised.
"And the galaxy will bathe in blood and fire. Humanity's dominance is at an end."
Motep cast about the chamber. His psi-sight showed him a grey shadow world that was indistinct and grainy. Corpses of the slain officers who had died in their quarters flickered briefly like dimming candles. A voracious life spark, red and angry, got Motep's attention. He saw the demon form. Its skin was like incandescent fire, constantly burning, and ribbed horns curled from its snarling head. A hide of thick black hair covered its back, from where immense tattered wings extended, and its clawed feet raked the floor.
"I see you,"
he whispered, and threw his spear. The demon roared in agony as the golden spear impaled its neck. Motep's eyes snapped open, and Wasoric became the fleshy abomination once more, transfixed by his weapon. He ran headlong at the creature, trying to make the most of the small advantage he had gained. The demon twisted, enduring the pain it brought as the spear tip tore at its ephemeral flesh. Its gaping maw split open all the way down through its torso, and just as Motep reached it, the demon vomited a hail of burning bone shards. The Thousand Sun took a shard in his leg that pierced his battle plate with ease. Limping backwards, he ripped the spear out of Wasoric's neck, Icos spewing in its wake, and thrust again, shredding through the muscle of the demon's shoulder. With a lurch of straining steel, the deck collapsed, Astartes and demon plunging into a dark void below. They landed in a dead space in the hull, separating the crew quarters from the lower industrial decks. A freezing gloom persisted there, crisscrossed with support beams. Motep rolled off the creature which had taken the brunt of the fall and staggered backwards. Wasoric rose with the screech of sundered metal. The struts around it were already damaged. The ship was breaking apart. The demon roared its anger, preparing to vent its wrath when the supports gave way. Together, they tumbled down into the cold blackness. The sound of the ocean receded as Bryngar came round. The scarred visage of the world-eater in his battle helm looked down on him.
"You're a sore sight for my eyes," grumbled the old wolf, and got to his feet.
Bryngar's body felt bruised with the effort, and the pain down one leg made him stagger at first before he righted himself. Blood flecked his beard and armour.
"How long was I out?"
he asked, aware that they were still in the armoury hall.
"Just a few minutes," Skral replied. "But we've no time to rest. Word-bearers are patrolling the ship looking for us." "Been hunting you for a while, eh?"
guessed the Space Wolf, taking in the rents and burns on Skral's armour. He could almost imagine the fevered look in his eyes, the kind of nervous expression that any man on the run might adopt after being chased for long enough. The world-eater was already volatile. Shaken up as he was, he might crack at any moment.
"Several weeks, I think."
The son of Angron came across a little dazed, as his time aboard the ship had dulled his sense of what was real and what were merely phantoms of the mind.
"Did anyone else get aboard?"
Bryngar asked, swinging Felltooth to better remember the strength of his arm. The old wolf noticed that the red-limbed portal was still open.
"I am the only survivor,"
Skral responded curtly, and headed for the light.
"You know where that leads?"
asked the wolf guard, noting the nonchalant way the world-eater approached the doorway.
"The corridor beyond will get us to the engine deck. We need to reach ordnance and destroy the cyclonic payload," said Bryngar. "And how do you know that we can reach the engines from there?"
"He knows, because I told him," said a familiar voice from the gloom that sent the hackles on the back of Bryngar's neck rising. "Destroying the cyclonics is no longer viable," he added, emerging out of the penumbra.
"Cestus,"
Bryngar growled when he said it. The ultramarine slammed a fresh clip from the armory's stores into his bolt pistol and nodded to the Space Wolf.
"There is but one opportunity left to us," Cestus said. "The easier course is no longer possible. We must walk the harder road. It is the only one open to us."
Bryngar's silence held the question.
"We must destroy the ship," said Cestus.